Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Dan Nemec, and we're going to talk about his Italian roots. So welcome, Dan. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for talking to me.
Oh, my pleasure. So let's start out this way. Where are your Italian roots from? What part of Italy?
My Italian roots are from a little town called Trigiano, T-R-I-G-G-I-A-N-O. And that's on the Achilles heel of the boot near Bari.
When did you get the bug to start researching your family?
Well, I'm an only child, and we would go to the wakes and weddings, and they all knew who I was. My dad's Polish, great big Polish guy, so they knew him. They knew, we were second cousins, third cousins kind of a deal. And so everybody knew who I was, and they'd all pick me up, you know, as a little kid, and they'd kiss me like crazy. I'm typical. And I'd be like, what's this? Because my immediate cousins never did any of that. And I didn't know, I couldn't remember all their names. There were so many of them. I felt like a fool. I'm like, hey, cuz. So I'm like, okay, I've got to, again, so I'm in my young, you know, preteens and then teens. And I'm like, I got to figure these people out. There's too many of them. I talked to my mother's mom and I start writing down just her siblings. Okay. Now my mother's mom is Irish. And so she had 8 siblings and I'm just starting that process. We're talking the early 90s, late 80s, maybe. And that started it. And I'm like, okay, now where are all these people? Well, most of them are gone already. Okay. And, so that was just that family. My dad's was easy. He had one brother. My mom's 1 of 8. So we have a big group, and then it expanded from there. And so it's been about 30 years of actually looking at official records rather than just talking to relatives.
Yeah, so it must have been a real challenge back then because there was no internet.
You are correct. Yeah, I grew up in Burbank, south suburbs, and so we were only a few miles away from the National Archives branch on 73rd and Pulaski. So I spent my Tuesday nights there quite a bit. Did not at the time know what a family history center was or what microfilm was. That came a little bit later. And so I was looking up census records in Soundex cards, microfilm in Soundex order. Yeah, if I ever have children or grandchildren, I'm going to be like, so back in my day, oh, yeah, you got it. Yeah, if any of us who've been at it for a long time have bad memories of, I could have done that in 0.2 seconds on Family Search, you know?
Right, right. So you have the Polish, Irish, and Italian. How did they all wind up in Chicago?
Well, the Polish, my timing is, as always, impeccable. I waited until everybody had passed away who had come over from Europe before I started this. I know a lot of people who wait until they are retirement age to start this. And of course they don't even have parents, much less, but, my dad's parents came from Poland when they were little kids. Their parents brought them over. Then my mother's father is my Italian ancestor. I'm only a quarter, Italian, but, he left the family when my mom was maybe 12 or 13 years old. So not only did we not, I never met him, but we never, I didn't get to talk to anybody about the trip over. You know, he came over also as a kid when his mother brought him over. My Irish grandmother was fourth generation. The Rileys were here in Chicago before the famine, slightly before the famine. So they either were hungry already or they, whatever it is, I obviously no way to find out why they left, but they were in the Chicago City Directory in 1842-43. So, a different story than the standard. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you say your grandfather left, I mean, he just left.
He just left. Yes. There was some sordid story about something that happened. It wasn't just, I've never heard anybody say that he cheated on grandma, but he was not very nice. And then he had something happen of a legal nature, and he didn't serve any time for it or whatever, but he ended up he left the family. He had a it's a long bad story. He died at 90. He did meet up with some relatives in the 80s, and I got pictures of those because he actually took the family pictures when he was still with my grandmother and threw them in the fire.
Really?
So he not only didn't help me with my
Wow.
research, he hindered it. So I call him when I give my presentations, I say my sainted grandfather, you know, so as not to use a bleepable expletive, but
Yeah.
he was a piece of work. Of course, I never met his parents. They died long before I was hatched. And so I have he had a baby sister. He had two, well, he had two baby half sisters, Francis and Mary. Francis was passed away a few years ago, 10 years ago. And she and I would go back and forth with stories, but she was born in Chicago. And her younger sister, Mary, would go back and forth with stories, also born in Chicago. And the two stories never matched up. You know, that, oh, that's, well, how could she know? She wasn't there, you know, and oh, she wasn't born yet. What could that? So, you know, you learned it's like, all right, well, you take down everything, and the 2% that matches up, that's probably the truth, you know. Yeah, the baby sister just passed away last November, a day short of 101. And you know, I spent, you know, 20 some odd years, 30 years picking her brain for everything it was worth, you know, because that's all I had. But you know, my grandfather lived in their building for a while, and that's why I couldn't go visit, it turns out. They lived on Huron in Chicago Street and near Damon, whatever. And my dad's mother lived on Superior Street. So we were a block away, and I knew I had cousins there, but I couldn't go over there because my grandfather was there. That
Wow.
was the reason why I couldn't see these cousins. So once that all ended, I was able to start seeing them again. All this drama, you know.
Yeah,
You
well,
think
you know,
Dynasty
this
and Dallas have drama? No, we've got
well,
our
we
own
all
right
do.
here.
So what did he do? What was his occupation?
That's a good question. I'm not sure he had one. He my you know my, my I think if I well that was the problem is I could have asked I tried to ask my grandmother, and she basically denied having ever been married to him, even though they had six kids together. You know, she just I don't
Wow.
remember. So she was one of those. My ma's not much of a talker either. She's her mother's daughter. There's no doubt on that. And I'm my father's son. I can't stop. But yeah, his occupation. I think he just bounced around. They moved fairly frequently when during the 30s and early 40s. You know, I say basically they moved when the rent was due. And but
Wow.
they were on Grand and Ogden, and then they were on Ohio Street, I think, and then they ended up more closer on Grant to Grand and Western. They kept moving west. If he'd have stayed with the family, they'd have ended up, you know, Grand Avenue would have diagonaled up, and they'd ended up by Irving Park Road or something. Who knows where they would have been? But yeah, he did not have a career. He had a series of little, you know, whatever jobs he could get. Again, the 30s is the Depression, obviously, so that probably didn't help. But my grandma did some of the working too back in those days, which was, you know, a little unusual, but yeah, anybody would take any work they could get if they, you know. I have no idea if he, again, because I couldn't talk to him, if he helped out during the war, you know, after he left us, you know, got a war job. I'm going to presume he did, but, you know, he's too old to serve. So he's born in 1905. So,
That's
yeah,
something. Wow.
you asked a very good question, and the answer is I
Yeah,
don't
I
really
don't
know.
know. So, you know, whether it's the Polish family or the Irish family, the Italian family, what kind of interesting facts have you found out about any of your ancestors?
Facts, yeah, that the facts are the tricky part. Well, the my grandfather was not much of a dad, and that may come from the fact that his father died when my grandfather was not even one. My great grandfather's name was Carlo Lituri, and we have several Carlos, of course, in the family due to the naming conventions. But the great grandfather died March 8th, 1906, on the day he arrived at Ellis Island.
Wow.
And yeah, and now that's one I got 19 totally different stories from people who, of course, weren't there and don't know. They heard it from who knows who. And so it took a long time for me to find the truth out, but I finally found a passenger list. He did not come through. No, he came through. Yeah, he came through New York, but the other family came through. His wife and widow and his kids came through Boston in 1914. So I presume Boston. Okay, I ended up finding him. It's stamped right on the passenger list. Died in hospital. So what hospital? So I'm writing to New York trying to figure out what hospital. Ellis Island had its own hospital, but it had burnt down, it turns out, 1900. They hadn't totally rebuilt it yet. So I actually found in an Italian microfilm that they had sent back a copy of his death certificate to Trigiano. I guess, somebody had to tell his wife that she's a widow now. And that told me that he died at Long Island College Ospedale, in they translated into Italian, of course, for them, and in Brooklyn. So I wrote to Kings County, and I finally got a copy of his death certificate, which didn't say much on it. He was 31. He had suffered a pulmonary edema, so it's lung related. And what's screwy is that when you get on the boats, a lot of people don't know this, but when you get on the boats over there, you get a full medical exam over there. Everybody talks about the one you get at Ellis Island, but the one you get in Europe, wherever you're leaving from, is to make sure that you're not bringing a nasty disease onto the boat, which is then going to spread to everybody on the boat. And also then when they have to take you back, that's precious cargo space that's now occupied by a sick person. And they don't make any money off that. So they have to pay a fine. And they have to bring back the sick person if they are too sick to stay in America. So they checked everybody thoroughly, and evidently they didn't check well enough. The death certificates, I finally got the microfilm, and the first seven or eight of them are all people that were on that boat and died within the first week.
Wow.
So whatever they got was nasty. And who knows whether they would have died had they stayed back in Italy is anybody's guess, but it does say that it was something nasty and contagious. So the finish of that story is that so he grew up without a dad. His mother remarried. It took about a year for her to remarry, and that's a long time over in Italy. When you've got a bunch of kids to raise, the remarriages would certainly they would happen 2 to 3 months after. If somebody died over there, let's say, if he'd have died in Italy, and she'd have been there right that moment, they would have somebody would have already been writing names down to hook her up with, within at the funeral probably. And by the end of a couple of 3 months, you're remarried because you need an income, you need a worker, and same for the men too. If the men were widowed, childbirth, women died in childbirth. Well, now I've got five kids to raise, and I got to go to the field and work, so. So she remarried, and then he came over, left her pregnant with her first child with him. So that kid didn't meet his father until he was seven, because they all came over 7 years later. It took 7 years to get the money over to Italy to bring the brood over. So.
Wow, that's so interesting. And you don't think about people dying as soon as they get here. My cousin, she's my fourth cousin, and our families were connected for a long time, and we didn't even know it until we found each other. But her great grandmother, I don't know if it was coming back this way or going back. I think it was going back to Italy, but she disappeared off the boat. And of course, nobody knows what happened. I mean, Linda kind of suspects that maybe there was some sort of foul play, but nobody knows for certain. She just
Well, that's
disappeared.
That's what I was told originally about my great grandfather.
How did
That,
this happen?
I heard that he fell off the boat, and of course they didn't retrieve him, that he was pushed off the boat, that he was got into an argument with a Greek, or the nationality changed every time the story was told. I'm like, okay, so none of you actually know. And finding the truth is, it says it's boring. He died of a disease. They took him off the boat, and probably just the act of moving him off the boat, put things into overdrive, and he didn't make it that day, and so he's buried in a pauper's grave in Brooklyn. They just wherever they put the the indigent population that had no relatives. And his son, my grandfather, is buried in a pauper's grave in Willow Springs, because when he died, he had none of his rel he had no connection with any of his relatives, and he lingered in the Cook County morgue for three weeks, and nobody claimed him, and so they put him in the so I got two generations buried unmarked, don't know where they are. You see the end of Amadeus, where they just sort of throw Mozart into this common pit. Yeah. So that's my grandpa and great grandpa. How do you like that?
Wow, that's something. And sad too. But I guess
Yeah.
they had to notify Italy because they needed
I'm
more.
wondering how they knew who to contact, because the passenger list, yes, it says that who he left, but not like an address. So they just probably put a name and Trigiano, Italy, and put it in an envelope and sent it over there, or they sent it to the city hall. It must have been city hall, because it was on the microfilm from their records. So it's a good thing they had that. But it was, they had the whole record translated into Italian. Not that there was much on it, but it was just like, oh, okay. After all the hunting in America, I finally found my American death in Italy, of all places. But
Well, and
so
that
yeah,
happens, yeah.
there are records separate from the main death records. You get toward the back end, the main death records in Italy are in nice format. You can kind of figure them out if you're not good with the language. But then at the end, they're all written in longhand, and they go on and on and on forever. It's all legalese, and you go, oh, those are a pain. But when you read them, you find out, okay, somebody died in a mining accident in Hibbing, Minnesota, and somebody else died, just picked up a disease, got tuberculosis, and died in Chicago or whatever. And you get copies of their death certificates in the Italian records. It's a surprise, and especially when you don't know the backstory.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. That's very interesting. I had no idea that they were doing that.
There's actually there's a separate batch of records that later on, called the Allegati di Morti. And so those are death records where there are other pieces of paper, and it might be actual copies of the American death certificates, the piece of paper that was sent over. So you might find it there, and then you know exactly where to look to find it here, so that's, so those are, yeah, there's
I
all
mean,
kinds
you,
of
yeah,
surprises out there.
maybe they knew somebody over here or had a friend or something, and that they would say, well, he's got family, she's got family in Italy or something like that. Maybe
I
that.
did notice one thing. I on the passenger lists in the 1910s of people coming into Chicago, that there were a lot of people who were going to end up at 515 North Milwaukee Avenue. I mean, dozens of them. And you just wonder whether or not that was one guy who was sort of quote unquote sponsoring. I can't imagine that they had enough room at 515 North Milwaukee to house all these people, but they were all from Trigiano. And so it's it had to be a little bit foolish that the guy's writing on the passenger list, which that was written in Italy, not here. And we're at 515 Milwaukee, 515 Milwaukee. Really? What kind of hotel is at 515 Milwaukee?
Well,
I mean,
it was probably more based on cash flowing from one place to another.
There wasn't a lot of flowing of cash. But as I'm sure many of your guests have told you, I can speak for the Bari people as well, that the husband or father would come over first,
That's right.
or he'd come over. And a lot of Italian men, because they were conscripted into the Italian army at 18, you find a tremendous number of 17-year-olds who said, you know what, I'm going to head to America. That's the better of the two options. So they ended up heading here at 17. My grandfather's oldest brother came over at 17. He was actually he got here before his stepdad. So, and that's the other thing that I've never found a good answer to, and maybe you've heard from somebody else, but my grandfather, he came over in 1905. His father, of course, never became a citizen because he lived here less than a day. And so my grandfather never, as far as I can tell, became a United States citizen. And he would have gotten grandfathered in from his dad, but his dad died. So his stepdad became a citizen. Now I asked John Philip Coletta, Dr. Coletta, the probably the best known expert on immigration. And he said, yeah, I said, do you get grandfathered citizenship from a stepdad? And he said, I really don't know. I said, well, good. If you don't know, I don't feel bad about not knowing. But there had to be something there, you know, because otherwise he died an alien in 1995, you know, or whatever the te yeah, wouldn't have been called that in 95, but he would have di died not a United States citizen.
Yeah, well, I
So.
only had out of my four grandparents, only my father's father naturalized. My father's mother never naturalized because she probably didn't need to have to. He probably did it, I'm guessing, because he did it in 39, and probably because he had a business and all of that stuff. So somebody must have told him he should get naturalized. My grandmother really didn't have any reason to. And my mom's parents, you know, probably didn't have any reason to either. But interesting that you say about, you know, when the Italians came over in 1905, my uncle was left behind when my grandparents came over in 1915. And he came in 1950 and had to go through Canada. And he came by himself to Canada. And then eventually, you know, the rest of the family came over. And, you know, we're talking 1950 now. So we're still happening in the 50s and 60s, you know, from
Well,
people I
I
talk
think
to.
where they came through, everybody presumes New York. And I spent a lot of time presuming New York until I found the others came through Boston. But the other kicker is that it was simply a matter of money. I mean, if it was cheaper to go through Boston, it didn't matter where they were going through, as long as they could get then travel to Chicago, which would have presumably been by train in the 1910s or whatnot. So they had to have enough money getting on the boat to make sure that they could buy a train ticket to Chicago to meet up with somebody. It's not like they got picked up in the jalopy and driven across the country, you know, not in those days. So it's you know it, so they could have come in a lot of different ports. And you know, if you got people from Sicily, you know, they had a lot more family down in Louisiana, and they go all the way down there. And then even there, they'd come to Chicago. It's like they met up with somebody in New Orleans, and then okay, now they take the train or who knows what to get to Chicago. So the trick was that a lot of people got on the boat with enough money for the ticket, and then the money would either get ripped off by someone else who didn't have enough, or they'd gamble, play a little cards, and somebody have a run of bad luck, and they'd get off the boat without any money. So they'd get stuck at the hotel at hotel, you know. We're not talking high class, not talking to Hilton here, at Ellis Island, and they'd have to wait for somebody to, you know, Western Union some money, and that wasn't easy back then either.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. So now, have you gone back to Trigiani at all? Have you been back?
Yes, I have. Thank you for asking that. That's yeah, I it was I spent basically the first this is a research journey, because a lot of people make, I'll call it a mistake. Maybe it's not a mistake to them, and that's fine. But they make the mistake of, I'm going to start doing my research, and 10 minutes later they're on a plane to Europe. Not the way to do it if you're going to do well with your research. The as again, many of your guests have probably pointed out, at least if they're researchers, there are the civil records for most of the southern half of Italy, certainly for the Kingdom of Two Sicilies, which would include Bari, are in 1809 to 1900, 1910, minor now to 1945. And they're on familysearch.org. So you can research anything you want and work on it and get back. So I basically spent 10, 12 years getting everything done I could possibly do. And of course, now you get a marriage in 1815. They're born before the 1809 records, and now you're stuck. Okay. So cut to 2011, and I get an email from a fellow named Paolo Ferrara. He's living in Paris, France, but his family is from Trigiano and later the city of Bari. And he says, "Hey, I see you're researching Trigiano. I'm from the Ferrara family. What do you got? What can you do?" So I had about 300 Ferraras in my records at that time. This is 2011. I sent him all connected trees and everything else. I said, "I don't know where you fit into all this, but here's what I've got." He was so he didn't expect much or anything. So he was so thankful. "I got to help you. I got to help you. What can I do?" I said, "Lunch is out. You're on another continent. We can't go to lunch. You know, you can buy me a drink, whatever." So he says, "I'm going to go to the church in Trigiano." I said, "Okay." He's not a genealogist. I don't know what he's going to do. So he goes to visit. He says, "I'm going to send you, I make copies of the entire baptism index of the
Wow.
Church of Trigiano. Now, anything before 1809, you have to go to the mother church of the town. I'm going to make copies of the baptism index. Now, I don't know what that means. If it's an index like I've seen, it could just be a name and not much else. Might not be very helpful. I need people connected to parents to make the tree get bigger." So he says this is on its way. So he tells me this in the first week of September. I'm sorry, if I said 2011, I correct myself, 2001. "I'm going to send this to you, September of 2001. And so it's in. So this package of I don't know what is in the air when the 9/11 attacks happen and all the flights stop. I'm like, I got this gift from heaven coming, and now it's maybe it's never going to make it. So I finally, like late September, I get this box. It's a book with every name from 1700 to 1787. Here's the name, and they had three or four Christian names on the baptisms in those days, and the name of the dad, and the name of the mom, and the date of the baptism for everybody in the town for 87 years. I went crazy. So it took me a year to plow through all that and update my tree. And I said, "Well, now I've got to go see what he missed." So your question was about the trip. So we're now into mid 2003, and I told some of my relatives, I said, "I'm going to Italy and I'm going to go work at the church. I got an email address for the parish priest, which is kind of rare. And I wrote him a letter. I had it translated in proper Italian. The computers didn't do very well back in those days, as I'm sure you're aware. And I sent him a note saying, I want to come and work in your church and try to add to my family tree. I know what I'm doing. I know how to read the records. I just need access." And he says, "Come at such and such a date." So I planned my trip around that date. And five of my relatives said, "Oh, great, we're all going to Italy." Okay, well, then we're all going to Italy, but I'm going to be in the church doing research. You guys do whatever you want. So, September of 2003, when travel was not easy internationally, thanks to 9/11, we hopped the flight and we spent 2 weeks. I spent 4 hours in the parish church. The day I went there, they didn't let me in, and I thought my trip was over. And then I went the next day, and they let me in, I guess my perseverance. And they put me in a room back by the little library, a bunch of books back behind the altar in this building that had been built in 1580 or whatever. And then they left the building and locked me in because they had to go to lunch. Lunch in Italy is multiple hours, you're grinning because you know. And so I'm like, okay, I know what kind of time I've got. I didn't know what I was going to be able to get or how many days I was going to be able to do it, but my goal was I want to have the last book back in the shelf when I'm done with it, and I want to be kneeling saying a prayer to thank the Lord for giving me that gift when they walk back in. I didn't want them to be like, come on, get out of there, you know, because I thought that would cost me access in the future. So I did, I took a zillion pictures of the records so that I could work on them on my own time at home. And then I breathed a sigh of relief, and then I could enjoy being with the cousins and family and so forth. My grand aunt, who she was 80 when she went with us, she finally met some cousins who had never come over here, and so that was, so they talked in dialect.
Mm-hmm.
Genet's dialect sounds, or Bades, I should say, sounds
yeah.
very, it's, the vowels sound French. It doesn't, none of it sounds like regular classic textbook Italian. So we
I
didn't
know it
understand
well.
A word they were saying. And so they were sitting there telling stories, and that push it out, that should do blah, 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 blah. And we're five medicons, me and my cousins, and are just looking at each other going, well, they're having a good time, I guess. So we start telling jokes in English. You know, the two guys with a parrot on his shoulder, and one bumps into a bar, and and they looked at us. I said, that's how it feels. But
well,
we had a beautiful time. We spent 10 days getting fed. I never lost the weight I gained over there. That's how. And then we spent 3 days in Rome as tourists, and it, you know, we enjoyed it, but it's like, we're no longer being waited on hand and foot. They're not taking us to visit places. It's just, we're on our own now. And so it was cool, but it was kind of an anticlimax, if you will, to 10 days with Familia. And now they introduced us to so many people. And here's the funny story. I'm just walking down the block, and there's a lady sitting on her front step. She's got this kind of gnarled, angry look on her face. We're dressed like American tourists, of course, so she knows I don't belong there. And I just said to her, you know, buongiorno, Daniel, sono di Chicago. And that's as much Italian as I know to this moment, and I don't even know that. And she says, oh, Chicago, Al Capone. And I said, no, Al Capone è morto. You know, I told that story. Everybody cracked up, because it's like, that's really what we're still known for. Thank you. You know, thanks, Al. Thanks for that. I go all the way to Italy, and nobody said, oh, you know, some businessman.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was told when we were there last year, that, you Americans all, you make your tomato sauce with ketchup. And I was like, no, we're not that bad.
No, not us. No,
we're not that bad.
Yeah. The ones who don't have ancestry here might make it with ketchup.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, no, we, if nothing passes down the generations, it's recipes. I mean, that's the important stuff. It's, you know, my family, my mother learned how to cook from her Irish mother. She had to cook some stuff for grandpa, I guess. That's
my
not
favorite,
an easy word.
My favorite Italian restaurant in Chicago, I just north of the town. I don't remember the exact section. Rose Angeles.
Okay.
It was in a little, it was in a, actually in a house. It was, you know, it was a house. They converted the house, and they had a little garden, and it was such a great place. And they've, I guess maybe COVID knocked them out, but I love that place.
COVID knocked a few out. Yeah, it's not the same to go to a nice sit down Italian restaurant and have a takeout order delivered in a bag in a microwave dish. It's just not the same. And of course, they lose their alcohol sales when you can't sit inside and have a drink. So yeah, I'm surprised. You know, some of these places did just well enough. They had enough reserves of cash to survive. Fortunately, I found Mambo Italiano, which is exactly halfway between where I work and where I live. And I only live 5 minutes from work. And so my car just turns itself, even if I'm not going to go there, my car just says, you want to eat here tonight? Okay, I guess I'm going to do that. And that's, you know, there they do everything so well there. It's not meaning to be a plug, because I don't know who's going to see this at the end, but it's that's mine. You know, there's some places. There's obviously places all over the city that might have legendary reputations, but I don't want to drive all that way if I can help it, just for, just for a meal. That's a long, if I'm with somebody, then it's like, okay, Tommy's Steakhouse, that kind of, there's some places, but,
Well, I had the luxury in that I was being paid by Chase Manhattan, so we got to go
you didn't hurt
where
their
we
bottom
wanted to
line too
go.
much,
We
even if
got to
you
go where we
really hit
wanted to
a,
go.
well,
Well,
I keep saying it.
we got $65 a day for dinner, so
That was your per diem. Okay, that's, yeah. No, if there's a bucket list item, and I know I'll never fulfill it, is to be able to sit down at Rao's in New York. That, I know the, from a documentary with Dick Schaap, the sports writer who's been gone a long time now, he said, I had a standing Monday reservation, and the standard, you call them up for a table, it's a year. That was in the 1990s. So it's like, that's like getting on Bozo Circus here in Chicago. You had a 7-year waiting list. So you're, by the time your little kid gets his tickets, he doesn't care about Bozo anymore. The show, there's like, oh, that's lame. I joked that my tickets came in last month, but,
Well, see, I didn't know there was a Bozo in Chicago. I was on Bozo in New York. I guess maybe 1959, 60, something like that. But I didn't have to wait because my father worked for the Daily News, and WPIX, that hope had the Bozo show, was a subsidiary of the Daily News. So,
It's all
vice
connection.
versa. But
It's who
I
you
walked right
know.
in. I'll tell you the funny thing about it is my dad knew, he knew all the celebrities. There was this officer, Joe Bolton. But anyway, we're walking around through the studio and everything, and my dad takes us in to meet Bozo, and he's in the clown. This is the funniest thing I ever saw, I think. He's in the clown costume with the big clown feet, and he's sitting with his feet up on the desk on the telephone. And it reminds me of the clown on The Simpsons who had the same character.
Rusty.
It was just like that scene, but real
We
life.
I didn't get to see yeah I didn't get to see the private side of Bob Bell, who was Bozo at the time or whatever, but that was a legendary. They still to this day on WGN, everybody knows that from Superstation and watching the Cubs nationwide back when that happened. But WGN had, they had the Bozo show, they had there were three or four different kids shows that were all on. Ray Rayner, you won't know him, but he was, he would cook a turkey every Thanksgiving. It would fall on the ground and everything. It's like, who's going to eat that now? But it was, those shows were legendary, and you wanted to get on them if you possibly could. And it was, it's like, okay, literally parents were like, okay, they're in the maternity, giving birth. It's like, don't forget to call for the Bozo ticket, so this kid gets to get on when they're young enough to care. It was so, it just got to be a joke that there's a 7-year waiting list, but it was a little studio. Well, move it to a bigger studio. You let there be 4,000 kids there every day screaming and yelling. It would have been a bigger show, but they
Yeah,
did what they
I think
did.
in
But
New York, I mean, there
it
were
was
probably
so
20 of us
badly,
or something like that,
yeah, it was so badly acted. I mean, we watched now because every year they show a highlight show at Christmas time of stuff from all those kids shows. And and it's like they're throwing pies and they miss, and it's okay, the whole sketch was predicated on getting hit with the pie and he missed them, and now there's no more pies left, and they're laughing because they know it's all screwed up. It's about as bad as a Tim Conway, Harvey Korman crack up on the Carol Burnett show. It's like, uh-oh, now what's going to happen? Harvey's laughing. So it's like that. Anyway,
Well,
yeah.
we had a great show over here. We had Soupy Sales, and
Yes.
he threw a pie at Frank Sinatra, so it got away with
That's some serious guts. Yes.
it got away with
Yes.
just before we go, I just want to ask you, have you done your DNA test?
I have done that, yes. Because I've got a great great grandfather who was a foundling. So there's no parents listed for him. So he's in a separate set of records called Atti Diversi. And he so he's born in 1855, and I have no idea who his parents are. I have everybody else back basically to the mid 1600s at this point. And then I made the onus decision, I don't know if that's the right word, of doing the descendants of all those ancestors. Okay, so I've got 90 some thousand people in my tree, and of course it's keeping track of the living ones is a nightmare, because you don't know who they all are and where they are. But where was I going with this? So I did the DNA specifically so that I might be able to trip over someone who's related through his parents. But the trouble is I'm related to everybody else in the town anyway.
Yeah.
So I have to know anybody who's a DNA match that's from there, that comes from there. It's like, okay, so my computer says I'm their seventh cousin. The DNA says I'm their fourth cousin. Ah, okay. That means that they're tied to somebody else. Now, my guy could have been born in a different town nearby and then left on the, you know, the doorstep, if you will. They gave him a Santo Liquido. They give him so he got left at the church based on that surname. So and I'm like, OK, so what about his kids? His oldest son was Carlo. His oldest daughter was Anna. And okay, so where are the Carlos and Annas? That didn't get me anywhere. So, you know, I get they don't know who the parents are. So you can't name your kids after your parents anyway, I guess. So, yeah, that's still a mystery. But the DNA, I did find, I found an entire line of Nemics in Old Forge, Pennsylvania, based on the DNA. They were too close to. If they're in my DNA as a close match and I don't already know who they are, immediately I got to look, okay, who are you? How do you connect? What's going on? So they connected back to this Piotr Niemiec back in our town in Poland. And that tied him into my line. So this whole big family popped up. And same thing on the Irish. I found a first marriage of some, you know, my great, great grandfather's brother that I didn't know about, and got their whole group. So I got a whole bunch of them in Joliet, Illinois. And just, yeah, the DNA can do amazing things that the records can't when you have these odd, you know, occurrences. I will say this, the Italian records, the civil records are very thorough and very complete. You occasionally get a bad name of the mom of a woman who died at 70, which was old age back in those days. They might not, you know, if she died young, they don't remember who she was. So they end up putting the wrong name on a death record, you know, old death record, but most of the records are pretty thorough. The ages are pretty bad. If you're 55, 60, 65 or 70, you should be very scared because that's the year you die. You know, because a lot of the death records, that's how old they all seem to be divisible by five because they really didn't know. I think the civil records office didn't want to have to contact the church and say, give me a baptism record for this person who died, because the church and the state were not exactly getting along. And I still don't think that they do, but they certainly didn't back then.
Well,
so
you know, my
they
cousin
just said, yeah, about 65.
My cousin told me that, you know, sometimes they would send the, you know, one of the little kids to the place, you know, this was like in the 40s, they would just send anybody and they would ask how old and same thing, you know, 42, 48, whatever.
Yeah.
They would just,
well, even American
something.
Records. Yeah. American records, when they say hospital records, that doesn't always bode well, for, you know, you get stuff with the, maiden name of the mother on a death certificate unknown. And, you know, and I went to a wake one time back in the 90s, and I heard that the sons, this woman was 94 and their kids are in their 60s, and they're all talking to each other going, it's too bad we don't know mom's mother's maiden name. I do. Sorry. You better amend that death certificate. You know, how the heck do you know? I don't think they really knew who I was. I just sort of popped in. And because I had talked to this lady on the phone a few times, and on the Polish side of all things, and so that group of cousins didn't know me, and I'm like, I can help with that.
That's funny.
So now I'm the contact guy. If somebody passes away, I will know about it, partly because they're going to call me and say, do you happen to have her birth certificate? Yeah, I do. And the other one is What was what do they contact? Oh yeah, they contact me. The cousins I haven't heard from in 10 years like to say, "Hey, my kid's got a family tree project." Oh, and I'm sure the teacher just wants them to hand in somebody else's work, right? You know,
Yeah,
so it's like, put your kid on the phone and let's talk. Let's make them earn this A, you know, and then I'll send
Yeah.
them the chart. So yeah, that's okay. Keeps me in touch with people, and that's probably honestly it's the only reason I'm on Facebook. Is just to stay in touch with relatives all over the place, and you know, get updated photos because that's always tricky. It's like, well, here's a photo of a kid is when they're two and they got three kids of their own now. Got to update that picture. So.
Yeah, and that's pretty much why I stay on there too, is mainly for that stuff. Well, Dan, this has been fascinating stories. I appreciate you taking the time
Oh, of
and
course.
you know, some good insight for people who are researching Italy for sure.
Oh yeah, that's the I wish I don't take on clients directly or whatever. If they find me on Facebook, I'll be glad to direct them to, you know, how to get started. I've been given a couple of talks at the Italian Cultural Center in Stone Park. Of course, by the time people see this or don't, you know, the dates might pass, but you know, it's actually difficult for me to remember what I did to get started. There was no help. There were no Italian genealogy groups. There certainly, as you say, there was no internet. There were three of us at the Family History Center when I first started going there, and we would fight each other to get to the good microfilm reader that could handle the little skinny film. And so, yeah, we would help each other with how to read the handwriting and what to do. But it's like, man, I can't even remember how horrible that was when I started, and now it's second nature. But it's so it's tough for beginners. It's very because the A, if they don't know the language, you don't need to be fluent. You don't need to have conversation. You just need to read the words in the right spots on the
Right.
page.
Yeah.
And so it's tough. People, they look at it and they go, oh, this is good. And then they see how much work and they get scared and they take up needlepoint or watch Gladiators or whatever. You know, so it's like, don't be scared of it. The benefits and meeting people. Your fifth cousin twice removed. So what if they're a fifth cousin twice removed? You meet people and find out that you got some good people out there.
Yeah, and there's plenty of help out there too. So,
Now there is, yes.
yeah. All right, well, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hi everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino, just letting you know that my new book, Farmers and Nobles, is now available for sale on www.italiangenealogy.blog/farmersandnobles, or you can find the link in the podcast notes. Thanks for listening.